Coming up next on This Week in Computer Hardware, SteamOS Beta installed the last two fastest GPUs of 2013, 18 cores of CPU awesome, one awesome keyboard, G-Sync monitor, shipping, and more. It's all coming up next on Twitch.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Twitch is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 247, recorded December 19th, 2013. The last fastest GPUs of 2013. Welcome to Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware. It is almost the end of the year, but the hardware news keeps firing, which is why Ryan Trout and I are here to enlighten you, inform you, and yes, ladies and gentlemen, answer a few of your questions. I'm Patrick Norton.
I'm Ryan Trout.
And I'm just enthusiastic this evening. We should start not with the glory that is the SteamOS beta and its installation, not with the excitement I have at finally buying a new GTX 760 because I needed something that would work with the SteamOS beta. We should start with how people can win something exciting from PCPer.com.
So we've talked about G-Sync quite a few times on the show. When Robert was filling in for you, we talked about it then because he's a display guy. He was really interested in it as well. And there's a little bit of a delay and holdup in like how they're releasing G-Sync and how they're going to get it out. But to kind of make up for that, they went out to several of these tech outlets and decided to allow us to give away some of these G-Sync kits. These are upgrade kits. They do not include the monitor. You already have to have the monitor. So you have to have an ASUS VG248QE display. That's 144 hertz, 24-inch, 1080p, 3D vision gaming panel. And if you go to PCPer.com and you look for this contest titled very cleverly, Win an ASUS VG248QE Upgrade Kit to Enable NVIDIA G-Sync, you can follow the directions there. You have to provide a picture of your existing monitor so people don't just like go steal pics from Google Images or something like that. And, you know, agree to you have to be in the U.S. and Canada. This is an NVIDIA restriction. And then we will send you one of these five kits if we pick your name randomly out of the submissions. So you could be basically, you know, some of the first 20 to 25 people to have access to NVIDIA G-Sync if you win this contest. So it's pretty cool. Like we have our monitor here, but we haven't gone through the upgrade process yet, which is something Alan's going to do for us to see how that works out and how difficult or not difficult it happens to be.
Emotional traumatizing, not emotionally traumatizing.
Could be either.
Oh my goodness. So yeah, so they're shipping. I mean, Heron was absolutely ecstatic talking about those on Techzilla. He's just, for some reason, tearing, I guess, has become the new bane of his gaming existence in a way that I don't really remember it ever being before. He's super excited. He's actually hoping to see this technology start to show up in a big way at CES this year. Of course, PC Per is going to be at CES. I'm going to be doing Techzilla at CES. It's going to be an interesting year for CES, in part. Well, actually, before we talk about CES and some of the other steamy stuff, you put a note in here to talk about the build guides for the PCPer.com/leaderboard, the holiday 2013 build guides, which, of course, came out literally like a day after I spent the better part of 2 days coaxing through there as I was trying to decide how to upgrade my system. You want to start to talk about the major changes or you know?
Well, So we have, if you go to PCPer.com/leaderboard, we always have these kind of four systems, something at like 500, something at like 1,000 to 1,100, and something at 16, and then one at like 3,000. And these are kind of, you know, just four price points that we think are fairly common that people go to. And, you know, if they're looking to build a system, they don't want to necessarily read through a whole bunch of reviews. They say, I trust the guys at PCPer. How can we, you know, just help me pick the parts?
And I trust the guys at PCPer.
And we appreciate it. What we hadn't done in a long time, though, is kind of put that into an article form, right? So even though we have the tab at the top and we talk about the leaderboard all the time, sometimes people just come and they read the story. So we said, okay, I told Jeremy, let's put this all together, wrap it up, tell a story about each individual system, why we picked these parts in a little bit of detail, and then provide all the links all in one place so that if people get some extra money for Christmas and they're like, you know what, it's finally time for me to build that gaming PC or to upgrade that gaming PC, that it's easy access kind of right in their frontal lobe, if you will, of data that they've just recently seen. So you can go through there. There's one page dedicated to the budget build, the low end, the mid-range, the high-end, and the dream machine. So depending on what your budget is, and obviously you can mix and match parts if you want, but, you know, they kind of, we've got pretty pictures of all the stuff that we pick and kind of some emphasis on why we selected them this time around. And I think mostly there wasn't a whole lot of changes from, say, what we had the week or two before, mm-hmm. actually. The biggest change was a removal of anything regarding the AMD R9 290 or 290X right. graphics cards, because they're just impossible to find now. When you can find them, they're overpriced. So we took those off the guide and replaced it with like a GTX 770 on our high-end system, for example. So that's pretty much the major change there. But if you're looking to build a gaming PC, and so now in the last month, we have provided you these various build guides. And I did videos that showed you how to actually assemble the parts, and then a video on how to actually install the operating system and set up Steam and all that in Windows as well. So if you are a complete noob, if you go to PCPro.com now, we have all the tools collected for you to build your first gaming PC on your holiday break, which sounds pretty awesome. Like, I wish that's what I was doing on my holiday break instead of preparing for CES. But
you can actually build a system and prepare for CES. I think you should take a day just for yourself, Ryan, over the holiday. Okay. Just come into the office and randomly pull parts out of other machines and assemble a perfect gaming machine for you. And then you can leave it coated with your tears as you leave it behind and head to Las Vegas for CES 2014. Oh, my goodness. It's going to be – I have this feeling it's going to be a big CES year, right? We talk about CES, Consumer Electronics Shows, basically the annual gathering of everybody and everything in the world of consumer electronics. You know, obviously Samsung, Sony, LG, Sharp, NVIDIA does announcements, Intel does announcements. Yep. And that's just the first day that's basically the press day of the opening day. That doesn't count. By like 8 o'clock on the opening day of CES, we've already done like 22 press events, or like 22 press conferences, two press gatherings, where there's like 100 vendors showing off their cool new stuff, basically just to the press. And then the show floor opens and the real mayhem of you know, 12,000 vendors or 12,000 products, like 2,000 vendors and 200,000 attendees.
I often wonder how much is like, are we just bitching and complaining too much? People don't understand. Like, CES officially starts on a Tuesday. I show up on Saturday and have meetings Saturday evening, right? So a long time ago, I used to show up to CES. If it started on Tuesday, I'd show up like Monday afternoon, go to the hotel, sleep, get up in the morning, and that's when everything started. And everybody wanted to go one day earlier. And then the next year, people wanted to beat those guys, so they went one day earlier. And now everybody's kind of like, I might as well just show up like December 30th, get everybody while they're setting up their demo suites, and then be out of there by January 1st, January 2nd, and we should all be good. So eventually, that's what it'll become. And I definitely will be in tears when we get to that point. So,
yeah, I don't think it's going to be quite that bad, but it's exciting. I think this year is going to be interesting. We're going to see 4K content. I think we're going to see, obviously 60 hertz 4K monitors. I think we're going to see, you know, some 4K desktop monitors or desktop size monitors. And I think we're going to see some interesting. I just feel like there's going to be something big this year because we haven't really had something really big in a couple of years. So I feel like we're due. Steam OS boxes we might see, or Steam boxes. I think you'll definitely see them.
Just whether or not that will be interesting or not.
I hope it's interesting. So you have a video. I did a review on a Texilla Byte to the Steam OS beta and whether or not you should download it. It's a custom version of Debian. It's a distro. It's a fork, if you will. It's customized. Essentially, I'm going to say it's basically Steam Big Picture that runs on Linux, and that's pretty much all it is. Do you want to, you know,
comes up immediately is, how is this different than just installing Steam on Linux that already exists and running it in Big Picture mode? And the truth is, there's not a lot of differences today. So here's the promise from Valve about SteamOS is that the operating system itself is tweaked in a way to facilitate gaming performance, input performance, in a way that other distros are not, right? And I'm not saying, obviously, it's Linux, so people could make these changes to Debian or Fedora or whatever they wanted to do, right? So, you know, things like VSync comes hard-coded enabled, you know, once you install. I think the polling rate of USB and the polling rate of the internal clock of the operating system is tweaked or improved some. One of the things that SteamOS will support, and I don't know if Steam on just any random Linux will support, is game streaming. It doesn't support it today in beta, but the streaming capability, which is
that's the big one for me.
Yeah. So the problem with, so we did a video where we did a SteamOS install, and then at the end of it, it was like, okay, well, let's install some games. And
all 12 of them.
You look through the Linux library, and there are some good ones, and but most of
Monaco,
them
tend to be Team Fortress 2.
Sure, there's that. I mean, like if you're looking for like AAA titles, we found Metro Last Light. If you want like a graphically impressive game, look, there are fun games. I'm not trying to discount the indie scene or anything like that, but there are no or very few like AAA games. So we installed Metro Last Light. And it took a while. It's 10, 12 gig download. And we played it, and it was actually pretty fun, right? It played great. It played, and it looked great as well. It's OpenGL, not DirectX. So, like, the visual quality settings are completely different. In fact, Metro Last Light literally had one bar. It was video. It was quality, and it went from low to high. And you could, like, move a slider back and forth between them. It was pretty weird. And the ability to stream is important for, you know, the fact that there aren't a whole lot of Linux games now. The idea would be if you have a Windows PC on your network that has Steam installed and you have lots of games on that Steam library, it steams them remotely, you know, over the local network to that machine. And, you know, it's kind of like having a, kind of like what NVIDIA does with their Shield PC game streaming, right? Same idea, only you're streaming to a SteamOS box. You don't need a whole lot of horsepower for that. So installing like a GTX 770 or a Titan or something is kind of overdoing it until they actually get games native.
Yeah.
So,
well, that's part of what's funny though, is they do want you to use a fairly well outfitted machine. They do want you to have a bunch of memory. You know, you basically, you can either do a traditional install, but what they really want you to do is basically drop an image onto a thumb drive and use CloneZilla to image that onto the hard drive. The specs are, you know, they want a 64-bit processor and 4 gigabytes of RAM minimum. It's funny. It was like, I was just so profoundly underwhelmed because I was like, the media stuff isn't there. And the streaming, because the streaming's what makes this really killer. And it's funny. I'm really curious to see what they end up with at this point, because the idea is solid, but the library is a mess. And or it's not that the library is a mess. It's just it's a Linux library at this point. So until they get the streaming in-house running, which is probably going to require an abysmal amount of hardware and then make you be like, why don't I just put a freaking Windows box in my living room in big picture mode? I'm curious to see what they do. I fixed it, did a teardown of one of the Steam machines. I don't know if you haven't seen it, that's also worth checking out. Because they released 300 beta kits. And the kit somebody, I guess, loaned to the iFixit people, they specced out at being roughly $1,300 in parts. The box they sent it in was, I think, probably the best part. I don't know if you have the link to that one, Faster Than Light. Sorry about that, Burke. When you think about it, like, they really, this is like a classic kind of like early adopter, amazing experience, because you get this like custom built case, and you open it up, and the design is actually really gorgeous. Like, there's the box there. It looks like some sort of, you know, military shipping package for something frightening and exciting. The remote actually looks better than I expected it to. And I really actually like the box design. I think I like it better than the Xbox One or the PlayStation 4 design. And then you kind of get inside and it's like, wow, there's a massive GPU in the front of this box.
Just a normal desktop graphics card.
And it's a really interesting sort of micro ATX design, which would be mini ATX design.
You know, it's funny. So like, they started shipping these and we saw pictures of it come out and Ken was here and I said, Ken, that looks really familiar. And I had literally just gotten in a micro ATX case from Silverstone. And I went, I picked it up and I looked at the back of it. And then I looked at the back of like the pictures of the back of the Steam Box. And I go, this is the same case. It's the same case with like funny. The modifications of the Halo coloring on the front and that type of thing. Uh-huh. And I think the iFixit teardown showed that it had like a 450 watt SFX power supply, which is a custom power supply form factor that Silverstone makes. Right. And I was like, well, that's the power supply that Silverstone just sent me this week as well. And so I started looking through all this. It's like, I can build the exact same thing.
Is it the MLO6?
I don't remember the model number now. Yeah. I'm going to be a bad tech guy and not remember the model number. I think it's like, it's brand new. It's the R. It's a Raven RVZ01 is what it's going to be called. So it's probably not a coincidence that it's being timed as the release as all this is kind of happening too. So
it's RV01? It's neat stuff.
RVZ01.
No. Definitely not the RVZ01. It's a full size case.
Yeah.
I don't even think it's up on the Raven website.
It might not be. It may be. Hopefully I didn't speak out of turn, but I have it here and I saw some people. I saw Maximum PC post a picture of it recently too. So we're going to do a build video of it, and we're basically going to say, like, hey, if you want to build the Steam Box, yeah, that power supply, that's the power supply we have. It's a cool case. It's a neat design.
I like it.
It has the riser card so that the graphics card is in a 90-degree, it's actually parallel to the motherboard as opposed to 90-degree perpendicular angle. So
it literally looks the same. Cool. Want one. Sorry, I'm just like,
that's we can make
like,
that happen.
Mini ITX boxes. I'll build it. That's actually a really cool box. We should probably swing things back away from Steam OSs and Steam boxes. But the Steam machine looks really good. I don't know how, you know, I don't know if anybody's going to pay. The
system itself's up in the air, right?
Yeah. It's one thing for Sony or Microsoft to eat the cost of expensive hardware to get their operating system out there or to get their platform out there. I don't think Valve has pockets that deep. And I understand Valve has created Steam machines at differing price levels that will deliver a differing experience, right? You know, if an onboard AMD GPU is going to be different from a standalone, you know, $1,000 GPU, it's the nature of the beast. I'm just really curious how this plays out because I don't really know if I see this evolving into a console, and I think that's what it needs to be to live up to its hype. That said, the operating system works, there's just that whole core issue with, you know, there's no DirectX, which means there's no Windows games. So we'll stream Windows games, which means you still need a PC to do the Windows game stuff. I wait with bated breath. I will say, though, it was snappy. It felt good. I don't know how much of the pain of installing the operating system was the actual annoyances and frustrations we had. Because good. That makes me feel better. Cause I was like, maybe we're just doomed. But you know, on top of like,
we just couldn't figure it out.
Did you have it
overwrite your thumb drive the first time?
No.
Okay.
But all right. My motherboard did die in between the second and a third attempt to image the drive. So, if you're not a Linux nerd, I would really think twice before getting into this, unless you actually want to become a Linux enthusiast.
out of necessity.
Oh my goodness. The Asus Republic of Gamers Mars 764 gigabyte dual GPU graphics card review, Mr. Ryan Shrout. Is this the fastest video card of 2013? Is this the last fastest card of the year? It's pretty.
It's not even the last fastest card of the episode. So This is the Mars 760. And what's interesting about the Mars brand from ASUS is that it's typically like a totally custom design, very unique to them. It's NVIDIA. The Mars brand is for NVIDIA. The Aries brand is for AMD. And like the last Mars card we had was like a 6-pound graphics card that had two GTX 580s on it, and it had three power connectors, right? That's the type of graphics card that the Mars used to be. And it was $1,200 at the time. This is much more grounded of a product. This is a dual GTX 760. It's $630, has two 8-pin power connectors. And it's not a super limited edition either. The Mars 2 was very limited edition, I think limited to like 999 units or something like that. Which was part of the justification for the cost. This card is $630 is still really expensive, but that puts it lower than the GTX 780 Ti and a little bit. It puts it between the 290X and the GTX 780 Ti. So, and its performance is actually pretty good. If you look at our benchmarks in the review, I'd say in 4 out of the 6 games, it's actually faster than the GTX 780 Ti, which is cool, right? It's faster and it's less expensive. The problem is, it's not really a problem, but it is a problem. It's something to consider. It's an SLI video card, right? It's got 4 gigs of memory, but it's only got 2 gigs per GPU. So you're always going to be dependent on SLI scaling for you to get the full performance out of this card. Luckily for potential buyers, NVIDIA has proven that they are, you know, in terms of multi-GPU preparedness, they are the kings, right? They never had these stuttering issues. They never had these frame pacing issues. They are always releasing drivers on a regular iteration to improve performance, but they can't solve everything. They're not going to get 100% scaling out of these two GPUs. And sometimes you're going to get 60 and sometimes you're going to get 90, right? And so it all just kind of depends on the game and the architecture and a whole bunch of other caveats. So if you're gaming it like 25x14 single display, I think the Mars 760 is actually a great card. You're going to be able to max out everything and, you know, you'll be able to play at better frame rates than you would with a 780 Ti. If you're gaming on a 4K monitor or you want to go into surround, the 2 gigabyte frame buffer per GPU will probably become a limiting factor and I would not recommend it, right? So that's the unfortunate part is that it's a cool custom design. Take two GTX 760 GPUs, glue them onto a PCB, put a PCI Express bridge chip between them and sell it because it's better performance. The problem is it's SLI and Crossfire inherently have different concerns, additional concerns than you do with anything on a single GPU. It's still a neat card. Like it's pretty. I don't know what this the texture of it is kind of like I think they called it like a rubberized paint, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. I like the texture of it. I mean, you're not going to be handling your video card very often, I guess. it does have an SLI connector on it, which is interesting because the single GPU GTX 760 that exists today only has one SLI connector, which means you can only do two-way SLI in the 760. With this SLI connector, you could do four-way GTX 760s if you had two of these Mars cards. So if you're crazy and you want to go that route, you can absolutely do it. But keep in mind that 4 GPUs definitely don't scale 400% of a single GPU. So, you know, things to consider.
There's that.
There's that.
Would be nice if it did. There's that.
It would be nice, wouldn't it?
it would be thoughtful. Meanwhile, Ryan's just revealed that this is the Mars 760 is not even the fastest card in this podcast. Would that be the Radeon R9 290X Direct CU2 graphics card?
That would be this video card, this ASUS video card. It's like the episode of ASUS video cards. So,
do I even want to know how much that is?
You've been on the show. Say again.
Do I even want to know how much this is?
This is only $20 more expensive than the reference cards.
Oh, okay.
So this is, you've been around since the R9 290X and the R9 290s released. Right. I was impressed with the cards, with the GPU's performance, but they had issues. They had clock variance issues and performance issues between retail cards and press sample cards and all that headache, right? And one of the things that we said fairly often was, well, maybe when the retail cards come out, it will fix everything. This is the first retail card that we got into our office. This is a single R9-290X GPU. It's a big card, but it's still just one GPU, and it's using the ASUS DirectCU2 cooler and custom PCB on its design. You can see on this side, I don't know how well it'll come across, but this is a 10-millimeter heat pipe along the top, wow. Direct contact heat pipe, and on the bottom, you've got four smaller heat pipes that all move heat from that single GPU to the fans to be cooled by the two fans on here. And here's the interesting part. Let's see if I can summarize this more quickly than I did last night. this GPU is only spec'd 50 megahertz higher than the reference card, than a retail card that you may have bought, you know, a week or two ago, right? So those cards are rated at 1,000. This card is rated at 1,050 megahertz. But thanks to the improved cooler, it runs, it keeps the GPU at a much lower temperature. It runs much quieter. This card ran over a 25-minute over a 25-minute gaming period, ran 178 megahertz faster than the purchased reference cooler card from about a month ago.
Wow.
Which is about 17% of the supposed rated performance of these cards, right? So that's a huge, huge difference. So this, I mean, this ASUS card, instead of running at 95C, was running at 77C.
Wow.
And the clock speed stayed at 1,050 megahertz the whole time over a 25-minute extended gaming period. The GPU is going to get as hot as it's going to get there. And it's 6 dBA quieter than the reference cooler, which is a huge amount, right? I think that's I think that's twice the sound pressure, I think, when you go up 6 dBA.
That's a huge chunk. I mean, and it's funny because I was looking at, you know, running Metro last night for an extended loop. We never saw the GPU temperature exceed 86 degrees Celsius. 1150 megahertz clock speed was pretty much fixed. The fan speed sprayed around 2000 RPM, that's 53%. Man, that's, I mean, basically, this is, you know, 30% more like surface area, or, you know, a whole bunch of copper, like 30% more surface area. The massive heat pipe, which is a huge increase over the 8-millimeter heat pipe. And literally, this is a case where, and some intelligent design on a cooler makes a ridiculous difference in the performance of a product. This is impressive.
This is a great product. The problem is it's not going to be available until mid-January. Like, it's not even supposed to be released until mid-January. So not only do you have potential availability issues because of Bitcoin mining and Litecoin mining and all that other stuff, you're going to have to wait another month or so before you even have the opportunity to buy this. And when it comes out, the MSRP is going to be $569, which is $20 higher than the MSRP of the 290Xs today. But will you be able to purchase it at that price? Will people be marking it up because they know it'll be a high demand product? You know, there might be some other issues with that. But it's great for AMD that they have these retail cards now, these partner cards that they can lean on that kind of solve all of the problems that I had previously. But it's like, why would AMD knew that this was going to happen? Like, they had to know that this was going to be such a drastic difference. And yet they still went with this blower design cooler that is so much louder, so much hotter, so much less efficient, and created kind of this, I would say, not negative, but like tepidly positive reaction to their product. Whereas had they come up with a better cooler, you know, which is what NVIDIA did a couple of generations ago. They invested a whole bunch of time and money and engineering in designing a cooler that was fairly quiet, fairly efficient, you know, but still leaving some room for their partners. I mean, it makes a world of difference on this. And there's still a switch for you to move it to quiet mode if you want it to be quieter and you're willing to let the GPU get up to like 92C. But it's still way quieter than what you had before. And it's a much, much, much better product than anything they had before.
I mean, did AMD need to leave more room for their partners this time around? Or is AMD just not, you know, do they not have the money to deal with the additional...
I think that's probably it. I think it's probably a manpower and man hour issue, right? It's do they have the money to invest in the people to fix these problems, or, you know, let's take our cooler from last time. We'll improve it just a little bit. It'll be fine. People will understand and we'll move on. I don't think they purposely wanted to prop up their partners in such an amazing way, right? And, you know, because people were buying these reference coolers. These reference coolers are going to continue to exist for the next year or two, probably. Mm-hmm. I got our second custom 290X card in this morning from Sapphire that has a triple fan design on it that we ran today that never dropped below its overclock speed of 1,040 megahertz. And it was significantly quieter than the reference, right on par with this ASUS card, right? So the retail cards are going to be, so far, based on the two I have tested now, so much better, right? And the same thing is going to happen to the R9 290. So this is the 290X. The new one I have is the 290X. Those are $550 cards. The R9 290, which is almost the same GPU, same PCB, they're going to apply these same coolers to it, and that's going to be $399, add $20 to $50 for the custom design, right? So
right.
If they could get a $420 DirectCU ASUS R9 290 card, as it stands today, that would be the hands-down recommendation card for an enthusiast gaming system, because it will run at the clocks it's supposed to, it will be quiet, and you'll be able to overclock it. And that's not something that we were really comfortable saying about the retail cards that existed before. It's so weird. It's so weird that it's so much different. Like, usually, when the GTX 680 came out, we review the reference card, and then, you know, a month goes by and all the NVIDIA partners are like, hey, Ryan, you want to review our retail card, our custom cooler? And I'm kind of like, yeah, I guess send one over. But the differences are usually minimal, right, in terms of temperature and performance and those types of things, that it's kind of not a very interesting article. the fact that this is so different and it behaves so much better is odd. It's good, but it's odd. I don't really know. Right. I don't know how else to like characterize it. It's so weird. No, it's weird. It's somebody who's been doing it for 15 years to see, and this is, it's not like they used a custom water block on it. It's not like, you know, this was some magnificent new out of this world cooling solution that ASUS used. This is the same cooler design they've been using for the last year on various high-end cards. It's just, they applied it to an architecture that drastically needed it. I guess I'll say. How's that?
Yeah, it's Unigen Heaven 4.0. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
That's yeah.
Yeah.
There you have it.
Yeah, there'll be more. we won't have an episode next week, but I'll have another review of that Sapphire R9 290X retail card if anybody wants to step in for that. Now, what's interesting about that one is Sapphire claims that that one may be available the week of Christmas. If so, that would be pretty interesting, because that would be 2 to 3 weeks ahead of this ASUS card. So we'll see. It's just, you know, we'll, as soon as they can get out there, hopefully the Bitcoin Litecoin miners won't drive the price up and screw all the PC gamers out of it. But
is that pretty much where all the 290s are going right now? Bitcoin, you know, enthusiasts.
We've had this debate at PC Perspective for a couple of weeks trying to figure it out. It's really, really hard to get any kind of specific data. But if you go look on eBay and Craigslist and you see cards for sale well over MSRP, specifically mentioning Litecoin mining.
Got it.
So it's definitely part of it, but I don't know at what percentage, or versus what percentage of it is simply lack of AMD having available GPUs. My hope is... that it's more my guess is AMD was holding back some of these Hawaii GPUs, and instead of making reference cards with them, they said, let's hold off a couple of weeks, let's fight through a couple of weeks of shortages, knowing they're going to take a hit from the media, and instead make sure we get as many of these cards out, or Sapphire or XFX or MSI instead, because these are going to present such a much better, you know, image of our product than what these cards did. The previous ones, right? So I hope that's what happens. And I hope when January hits after CES, like, the market's just like flooded with 290 and 290X custom designs. I don't know if that will be the case.
But we'll see. Oh my goodness. Yeah, it's the Yeah, the whole light. Everybody who missed out on Bitcoin is now just going berserk trying to catch up on Litecoin. I'm glad I'm a mid-range gamer. GTX 260s are not nearly as exciting to that crew. I love a good keyboard. I have, you know, a stash of vintage IBM Alps mechanical switch keyboards. You have blown through a staggering number of keyboards over the years, and you did not expect to be impressed when Seasonic called you up. Is it the Topre or Topre or Toper? The Type
Heaven. I have no idea. It's a Japanese.
Let us call it
company.
The Topre.
I was calling it the Topre. Somebody in the chat room last night told me it was called Toper. But
you know, like when the English reverse the RE for theater.
Yeah, it's a Japanese name, and so I think they said it something like, I don't know, I can't do the enunciation that you would do in Japanese, but I go, yeah, that's probably correct, but I'm not saying that. So, Topre, Type Heaven. You know, the interesting thing for me is I've never considered myself a keyboard snob. If I find a $40 Logitech set or Microsoft set, I'll buy a few of those for the office because we go through keyboards fairly often. And I like the feel of typing on Cherry keys, but I kind of hate the noise. My wife definitely hates the noise of the Cherry keyboards. And so Seasonic is actually the distributor of these keyboards in the U.S. now. And they're, you know, 2-year warranty and all that. So like, hey, you want to try one of these? And I said, you can send it over, but no promises. And so as most of the time when somebody sends me a keyboard, I just replace whatever keyboard's on my primary writing desk and use it for a little while until I get tired of it and move on. And I really like this. It's a, what do they call it, electrostatic capacitance switch on it. It doesn't have like a mechanical click to it. And in fact, you don't have to press the key down very far, maybe like 4 millimeters, something like that. I don't know what it is, before it to register. And when you do push all the way down, you don't get that kind of hard snap click that you get with a lot of the Cherry keys.
Go ahead. I mean, let me amplify that. It's the keys are electrostatic. So you push the key, sensors, I'm going to read this right off Seasonic's website.
Okay.
When a key is pressed, sensors move closer to each other and detect a change in capacity for storing a charge, which then translates to a stop or start in the flow of electricity in order to input the correct keystroke. That's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's still louder than like a membrane Logitech keyboard. But like I've been using this Topre Type Heaven, and Ken, who sits immediately, you know, 3 feet behind me, has been using a Corsair K90, I think. I forget. I think it has cherry red keys in it. And there's a significant difference between the sound of him typing and the sound of me typing. And the Topre is still loud, but it doesn't have like a harsh kind of clicking sound. It's kind of I call it a happy medium between the feel of the Cherry keys and the sound of the Cherry keys, but you kind of get a little bit of both. The downside to this is it's $150, which is not super expensive in the world of Cherry keyboards, right? You know, that's kind of, it's on the high side, but it's not way outside. It also doesn't have any multimedia functionality. It doesn't have play, skip track, volume buttons or anything like that, which I had become quite accustomed to using on a daily basis at my desktop. So that's kind of a disappointment, but I liked typing on it enough. I was writing thousands and thousands of words of articles over the last month, and it's comfortable, right? Like my fingers don't hurt afterwards, my wrists don't hurt afterwards, and that's really the most important thing to me. And if I have to use my mouse to go to Spotify and hit pause instead of reaching for a button, I'll do that, I guess. Damn, but it's pretty nice. But I understand that a lot of people have just like this mental block of paying $150 for a keyboard, and I totally understand that.
I used to try to do a 1,000 years ago when I was still doing Windows Sources magazine, I always tried to get a monitor or a keyboard or a mouse review in every episode because people don't really think about it because everybody's excited. I got a new GPU. I'm going to get a new, you know, I'm getting a new CPU. And the reality is few things really impact your relationship to the stuff you are working on or the game you are playing as much as the monitor you're looking at. And if the color is even remotely properly calibrated or if it's a decent monitor to begin with. And the keyboard and mouse and switching to a keyboard. I mean, when you say, you know, I don't hurt as much when I leave my keyboard. That's a big deal because a lot of people, you know, especially a lot of the younger people in the audience, you don't realize, you know, that the trauma you do to your body, you don't really think about, you know, it's not the first accident. It's not, you know, the last walk you took. It's the 42 million keystrokes in between, like, you know, 12 and 40 that starts to pile up after a while. And getting a, especially, if, you know, if you are writing for a living, if you code for a living, you know, I have several friends who code for a living who have destroyed their wrists and have to use really either, you know, have to use these really insane keyboard designs, like back keyboards, to keep, you know, to actually be able to do their jobs and function. So I like the idea that there's something out there that's, you know, moving the technology forward.
They've had this patent since 1984.
Huh.
They've been making keyboards for a long time, but it's just not it's not a brand I had heard of until Seasonic brought it up to me. People had been importing these in the U.S. There are some other small places that were selling them. But Seasonic now is the primary distributor in the U.S., and they're like, hey, you want to try one of these out? I was, sure, I guess. You know,
the number one Japanese keyboard manufacturer.
Yeah, yeah. Hmm. And I think they have several other models. I think this is the only one that they're carrying in the U.S. right now. But I guess depending on what the reaction is to it, they may bring over some other models. I would love to see, for me, I would love to see this keyboard with some multimedia functionality, and I would be great, right? Just, they don't even have to be the special keys. If it's a cost issue, you can make them standard keys because they're not as you know, as important in that way, but still pretty cool stuff.
I like it. Intel Broadwell EP Xeon E5 V4, because why not? Scott wrote this up for PC Perspective. So this is basically leaked details from VRZone, who, quote, knows how to get a hold of Intel slides. So this is the product line predicted to replace Haswell EP at some point in the summer of 2015. Possibly around the Intel Developer Forum. Intel's first 14 nanometers Xeon processor. What do you think? I mean, anything particularly surprising on the leak, so, other than it's small and it should be fast?
Well, this is not going to be small.
A small process. My apologies.
Oh, yeah. So first thing, this is Broadwell E. So we just got Ivy Bridge E. We still have to get Haswell E, and then we'll get Broadwell E. So this is a 2015 product for sure. But the idea of having a processor that has 18 cores and 36 threads per socket is pretty awesome. And up to 45 megs of L3 cache. And up to 1 teraflop of double precision floating point performance per socket, like, of just raw CPU power, no GPU involved in that number at all, which is pretty impressive. Now, it's CPU only, so it's not like AMD's Kaveri APU that will launch early next year is going to have about 850 gigaflops of performance, including its CPU and its GPU. And that's obviously a 2014 part versus a 2015 part for this. But something about having a dual processor, 36-core, 72-thread system just sounds really awesome. I can't imagine that software will advance to the point in between now and 2015 that we'll need that for any kind of standard use cases. But, you know, that's not really what I'm concerned about. We're not worried about what's practical when you look at these parts.
It's just what's about, possible.
Yeah. Quad channel DDR4, you know, still PCIe 3, still 40 lanes of it, no dramatic improvement there. And I believe, maybe I read that wrong, 160 watt TDP, which is pretty high for those of you that aren't keeping track at home. But
It's a big monster processor. This could all be completely
wrong. I don't know. But an 18-core processor, I'm okay with that.
18 cores per socket, 36 threads per socket, like ridiculous amounts of cache.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm
you okay with that?
Good. I'm okay with that. I want everything on the internet to work better and faster.
yeah.
Because I'm selfish that way. Oh, my goodness. We love your questions, folks. Twitch, TWICH at twit.tv is the email address, or you can hit at Ryan Schrouder, at Patrick Norton. We got an interesting comment from Steven about building versus buying, and it's something I can relate to. He says, as a regular, I listened to your discussion about PC building versus buying with interest. I've been in a house with a computer since 1981, although there was a break along the way after leaving my parents' abode. I know that feeling. The first PC I personally owned was a 386 DX 40 shop spec with similarly dated interior furnishings. The focus back then was on the CPU, and video cards were not yet an item. I've owned several PCs since then, but while I followed hardware news and was comfortable with software, remained loath to build my own or, in fact, fiddle with the insides. I gradually moved towards plugging additional hardware in and eventually got around to building a PC about 12 years ago. My PC worked. It ran well. It had a good long life, but it was messy. I have too many thumbs, and I am not a person to whom you would willingly hand a hammer and nails. Cables ran everywhere. I ended up with spare bits, and the result was untidy. Since then, I have returned to picking the hardware and paying someone else to put it together. What for me would be a 4 or 5 hour job is half an hour for somebody who does it all day, and it's worth the extra $50. I am happy to open the case up and add a drive or other hardware, but building the whole thing is just not logical. So yes, there are listeners like me who like to know what's happening in hardware news, but don't actually slot it all together. As always, great show. And I want to thank Steven for writing in. It's kind of funny. You get to a certain point where, you know, it's okay. Look, I don't say it. It's okay. If I have a choice between spending like 2 hours building something and 2 hours playing with my kid, I get a funny feeling that the cabinet doors aren't going to be fixed. Case in point, I have 2 cabinet doors to fix in my kitchen right now, and I spent a couple hours playing with my youngest child this morning. You know, it's okay. It's okay. It's okay.
Yeah,
to buy what
once, right, 100% agree. That's why we still do. That's why part of what we do in PC Per is still, you know, full system reviews. Right, we do those every once in a while because we know there's an audience for that. People who read up want to know about the stuff, but then don't want to have to go through the final step of putting it all together. I would say that he says in that email, if pay somebody. You know, it's going to cost $50. That's probably a little bit on the low side. Right. If it were really only a $50 markup, then I think most people, maybe not most, but a lot more people would do that. Right. It's probably, you know, a couple $100 depending on the price of your build. But still, it's what is your time worth? What is your responsibility worth? What is that warranty worth? And I think, you know, it's good to know. It's good to be able to tell people that those people exist and that they listen to us. And, you know, maybe they get to hear us talk about other crazy things like headphone amps and stuff that they would maybe actually purchase and deal with as well. So that helps.
Or they know they don't need to spend the extra $200 for the super zoot memory or 16 gigabytes of memory when they're not doing things that require 16 gigabytes of memory. I mean, it's all good, man. I got to say, we did a Puget Systems review a while back, and I remember opening this beautifully put together system because I was laughing. Like I had a motherboard die during the SteamOS build, and you know, so $200 later I owned the last 1155 motherboard you know, in San Francisco or the peninsula. It's a nice motherboard. You know, I'm pretty sure it was somebody's RMA from a build. But we won't talk about that. But you know, it's running, everything's working, I'm happy. But I remember I took like an extra 30 minutes because I was going to hide all of the cables behind the slots, behind the motherboard. And I'm very proud because this is the first, you know, system I've built in a really long time that doesn't look like, you know, some sort of wire eating monster puked inside of the case. It's you know, several days worth of wire eating mess. And I also laugh because the other reason it doesn't look so bad cabled, because, you know, I hit all the cables and did everything super, super neatly because I was being super, super careful. But it's also the first machine I've built in a couple of years where I didn't have at least 4 to 6 drives, or in the case of the Rip Monster, where I had literally 7 Blu-ray and DVD drives and 3 additional hard drives on top of that. Because at some point, you just get to a point where, you know, you've got to be really, really amazing to deal with the cabling when you've got like 12 different SATA devices inside your box. So
that's a little extreme. Yeah,
it's the one machine I built where it had like the Rip Monster 3000 where there's like seven, you know, 5 1/4 inch drives and like 3 3.5 inch drive and a 2.5 inch SSD. It really like at one point I was trying and then I was just like,
that's pretty much what my PC builds end up as too. It's like you got the twist ties out and I'm like, nobody's gonna see this. Just close the door.
I like close the door. When you can hide the cables, though, it's nice.
That's how I clean my house too. And my wife doesn't appreciate it, so we have I got other issues I got to deal with there. So
I'm just gonna move this right along. Uzezi emails with a helpful website. I'm just imagining like opening the closet because I've had that closet.
I'll do that. Don't open that closet door.
Don't open that closet, especially if there's small children around. They can get buried.
Get buried.
He says, I found this website recently when trying to build my first PC, PCPartPicker.com. He says it is an invaluable resource for the first-time PC builder. It makes PC building incredibly easy. Check it out and tell others about it. It is a classic. It's good stuff.
It's a great place to go. It's not going to help you necessarily select the parts that you want, like based on performance or features, anything like that. But once you kind of know what you want in terms of building out and pricing it, they do some really awesome stuff there. And they also they help check for compatibility. Like if your motherboard only has one PCI Express slot and you add a second graphics card, it's going to say, hey, no, you can't do that.
Right.
This motherboard doesn't support SLI or doesn't support Crossfire. So it's a cool site, PCPartPicker.com. He's been around for a while. I know Phil pretty well.
It's good stuff. I was also laughing. So it's like, look at all the 1155 motherboards that are available if I could have waited 24 hours for Amazon Prime.
that's one of the benefits of things like our PC Perspective Hardware Leaderboard, right? If you go to PC Part Picker and you go, well, let's pick a motherboard. And you just like look at the list of options that are provided. It's just like this overwhelming amount of data. And even like using the filters on the right hand side where you can kind of select which vendor you want. But if you're kind of vendor agnostic, you're just like, I mean, look how far he's scrolling. He's not even out of the A's yet. Oh, there he is, BioStar. Yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff there. So, I would say utilize both resources and you'll be fine.
And look how much I overpaid for that motherboard. Wow. Let's move on to our final question of the year, ladies and gentlemen. We want to thank you as always for joining Ryan and I or Alan and I or Robert and I or Alan and Robert and Ryan or whatever combination of humanity
whatever permutation you come up with.
Oh my goodness. There's a lot of traveling this winter. We got an email from HackOn looking to upgrade an aging system. Because we all have aging systems to upgrade. It says, I'm looking for a GPU upgrade option for an older motherboard, an EVGA N4790i Ultra SLI 132CK and F79. By the way, HackOn, you get a big thumbs up for being super detailed. Being limited to PCI Express 2.0 on this board, what cards, if any, make sense given everything has moved to 3.0? I'd be replacing two GTX 460s in SLI. The motherboard's maxed out on RAM with 8 gigs of 1066 DDR3. The CPU is a Q9550 Core 2 Quad running in a stock 2883 megahertz, Windows 8.1 Pro 64-bit. I'm running into some game crashing issues, possibly temperature-related. With the current setup, I realize this hardware will never run Battlefield, etc. at maxed out settings, but looking to squeeze some more life out of this motherboard. Or is it just time to toss everything and start fresh? I guess the big question is PCI 3.0 really a real world advantage over PCI Express 2.0?
Not really. I mean, there are some advantages there, but it really only comes up if you're doing multi-GPU. And in most cases, like really high-end GPUs and probably three of them, maybe even two wouldn't even take advantage of it. I think, so the graphics cards, the two 460s, those are old, long in the tooth. The part that made me kind of chuckle was the Enforce 790i chipset, which was released in, March of 2008. So that's definitely your kind of limiting factor in my book. That processor, the Core 2 Quad, you know, process. If you buy a Haswell processor today, you're going to get a gigahertz of frequency at it and much, much faster IPC on those cores. Mm-hmm. You could still, if it's, is that DDR3? Is that really DDR3 memory? I thought that was DDR2. If it's DDR3, in theory, you could use, yeah, it is DDR3. It was actually NVIDIA's first DDR3 memory controller. You could, in theory, still use those memory modules if you upgrade your motherboard and processor. And the two 460s, I mean, you've got a gig of frame buffer only on them. I think you'd be good upgrading something like that to like a GTX 770. Mm-hmm. I know he's trying to squeeze some more life out of the motherboard. You will get better gaming performance if you upgrade to like a GTX 770 or Radeon R9 290. You will. But at some point, we have to start looking at the poor guy's processor and motherboard combination. I still don't think it will be the main bottleneck. It will be a bottleneck, but I don't think it will be the main bottleneck. You know, a five and a half, almost closer to six than 5 year old motherboard that's still running strong. I'm impressed with. If he's having stability issues, I might start to look at that. He says they might be temperature related crashes, but didn't say if it's on a GPU or a processor. Chipsets back in those days, that motherboard had a significantly large heatsink on it, mm-hmm. and fan. The 790i Ultra and the what do they call it? The Northbridge and the Southbridge, or the SPP and the MCP. Those weren't cool running chips necessarily. And they were great products at the time, but I think it might be time to retire those. It might be time to retire those. I'm sorry if I am offending your wallet with these statements.
No, but it is possibly worth it to go through, you know, very carefully clean out, make sure there's no dust, make sure there's not a giant pile of cat hair on the inside of the PC. You know, make sure your fans are aligned and that your fans haven't given out. You know what I mean? Like, eliminate the thermals as an issue. At the very least, like, you know, put the case on, you know, take the lid off the case, put the case on its side, make sure there's not a lot of cruft and, you know, or dust or a giant dust bunny of doom living in there. If there is, very carefully vacuum it out. And leave the lid off and try gaming for a couple of days and see if it is an actual thermal issue. And if it is, maybe you spend $40 on fans, you know. Put two in the front pulling and two in the back pushing and see if that eliminates the thermal issue on there. You know, because I know the joy of keeping a gaming system running for 5 years, and it gets ugly at the end, even without some sort of massive emotional shift like AGP to PCI Express, where you really get like, where did all the AGP cards go? Where? Oh, my goodness. And I got to mention it. The Verge has a great look at the new, you know, pictorial look at the new Mac Pro, which fascinates me. And 9to5 Mac has a great write up, by the way, on the apparent shortage of Mac Pros, where they're talking people who started ordering or were originally receiving shipment dates in like February, and now are looking at March.
Geez.
Yeah, I should probably pull up. Let's go to Apple. If I pull up apple.com.
Man, these are awesome looking computers, but
It is a magnificent piece of engineering. It is unbelievably cool. It is it is a huge, unfathomable leap forward in just aesthetic design and doing a lot of obvious things in terms of handling the heat. You know what I mean? Like, you know, we were blown away. It's like, you put the power supply at the top and the heat's at the top, so the heat doesn't go from the power supply at the bottom and over all of the stuff that doesn't need heat, like the CPU and the G. You know what I mean? Like, that alone is brilliant. But this, where you basically, you know, put the things that generate in heat in the middle and create a stack effect so it pulls the heat right out.
You got to wonder how much of that aesthetic design is causing the shortage of parts.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, and these are also, it's like, it's partially so frustrating because you're looking at a basic build of $3,000 for a quad core, you know, $4,000 for a six core. Yeah, basically, if you order one online right now, you're shipping in February, available for pickup, check availability. This will be really funny because I'm in like Apple ground zero here.
Yeah, you are. Yeah.
They'll be for Mac Pro, ships to store. Ships to store when?
Nothing.
No, actually, maybe, I don't know. It's hard to tell.
We had many people like ask on Twitter and through email or in the chat room, hey, you're going to review one of the new Mac Pros. And I just, Apple's not giving me one.
Yeah.
And I'm not spending $5,000 on a computer that will be really awesome, but that I know is overpriced. It's going to be cool, yeah. But if I needed that performance, then I would go elsewhere personally. But
well, and that's what's so frustrating about it is because you look at this and it's like, you know, it was also, it's funny because so many of the people I knew who are still using Mac Pros have them utterly stuffed with hard drives. And there's that cartoon that was floating around where they showed all of the stuff you'll have to plug externally into this svelte, elegant design. But
it's cool, man. Just Thunderbolt that stuff, right? You've got Thunderbolt accessories.
I love Thunderbolt. I got a $50 Thunderbolt cable. $50
per cable you want to connect.
I'm going to use that cable everywhere. I want to buy a Thunderbolt adapter for my Core i5 with a GTX 760 just so I can use that cable more. Is that you, Burke? It's really freaking me out if that's my automatic focus.
I'll have to go to, definitely not until, I'll probably have to wait till after CES because I'm not going to go to the Apple store during the holiday buying season to see if they have one of these there in person. Look at it.
You know, the best reason to go to the Apple store during the holidays or any mall this close to Christmas is because of how good you'll feel leaving.
No. My issue would be leaving the mall and then having to sit in the traffic getting out of the parking lot. Oh. Patrick, it's okay. I'm much safer sitting in my house, sitting in my office as I have done most of the last several days. So,
ladies and gentlemen, with that, we would like to remind you, the longer you wait, the more computing power you'll get for less money, and you won't be wondering if that cool thing already shipped. You'll just be wondering if the next cool thing is going to ship after you buy whatever you buy next, which is really random, but I swear it's true if you look at this stuff over time. CES is coming. PCPro.com is going to be there. Techzilla.com is going to be there. And we want to thank you, as always, for listening each and every week. If you haven't subscribed, please do. twit.tv/Twitch. TWICH, twit.tv/Twitch. Get us fired up with your podcaster. We'll try to bring you the most useful, informative, and helpful PC, tablets, and, well, hardware, computery, consumer electronic stuff-related news that we can each and every week. And thank you again for a great 2013. I'm Patrick Horton.
I'm Ryan Schrout.
We'll see you next week. We'll see you in the new year on Twitch.